Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Flight Through Entirety, the only Doctor Who podcast that can carry off a decorative vegetable. Well, maybe not the only one. I'm Nathan.
I'm James.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Dan.
Well, we've just said goodbye to Martha, and we're still a couple of days away from Kylie. So we've decided to stand around in the console room for a few minutes and remind ourselves how much we all love Peter Davison. Keep your hats on, please. It's Time Crash. Never actually really done one of these before. There has been one earlier Children in Need special, obviously just between the end of series one and the Christmas invasion.
Only one Children in Need special.
Oh, really? What was, were there other ones?
The Five Doctors.
Oh, no, right. In the new series. That was a really long Children in Need special. Yeah, that doesn't count. And so this aired on the sort of 17th of November 2007?
No, 16th of November 2007.
Oh, you know, I don't believe in time zones. And so Last of the Time Lords was sort of end of June. Is that right? Or was it end of July, James? Okay. So,
Great start.
So what did you guys think of this?
I had no idea it was coming, for one thing, and I don't even know how I found out about it, and I don't know that I watched it on TV. I must have watched it on the internet. I've never been able to find a good way to watch it, but it just, yeah, I was so surprised and so pleased, and as it goes through, I think it's just really fun. I really enjoyed it, and then they didn't even need that really lovely tearjerker bit at the end where he tells him he's his doctor, and I just loved it. It makes me moisten up every time.
What about you, Stephen?
So, as you can imagine, I keep saying on You to Who that Davison was my doctor out of choice as an adolescent. And like Dan, I didn't know this was coming. I didn't even know that Davison was in it. This is obviously in the days before Twitter and definitely in the days before, you know, I dipped into fandom in any real way. So, when things like this dropped, including, for instance, the Eccleston regeneration, I had no idea. I was totally unspoiled. Mm. So, to see this and to see my favourite doctor again, I couldn't tell you how much my fanish heart squealed. It was just a wonderful moment in time.
It is super exciting. You know, Dan, you can actually watch it. When I was looking at the DVD, the Series 4 DVD.
It's on the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Yeah, it has Time Crash on it. So it is preserved and our listeners can watch it themselves if they didn't catch it the first time. It is very much a sort of Children in Need special, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's two actors in the standing set with sort of very minimal kind of special effects or anything. James looks like he's itching to say something.
I was going to do some of your shtick. So I was reading Titus Eruditorum. and I thought L. Sandifer made a really good point, which was that it's like this story is an exquisitely crafted 8-minute sketch that works well both for people who remember the Davison era and for people who don't give a crap about Doctor Who and who are watching Children in Need.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Moffat, isn't it? Like, I always sort of think that Russell's better at TV than Moffat in many ways, in the sense that he's better at kind of creating something with mass audience appeal. But here he does a very, very good job, I think, of pitching it both for us and for the not we.
Yeah, I think the sort of the time travel, like, they make it pretty clear what's going on pretty quickly. Like, Tennant knows what's going on and Davison seems like blissfully ignorant for a few minutes. And then they sort of, they solve the crisis with a little bit of like time travel cleverness. Nothing like super heavy, but a nice, simple RTD, like neat and tidy, understandable little time travel timey-wimey. And I just think it's so clever and so neat and it all gets tied up in a little bow. I think it's, it's really cute.
I had to sort of reread a transcript of it to actually work out, like, even though I've seen it a bunch of times, to actually work out what the threat is, you know.
and it's two TARDISes, right? It's just they've just bumped into each other or something. Yeah,
It's Legopolis.
It's a hole the size of Belgium.
Yes, no, I knew it was going to blow a hole in the universe the size of Belgium, but I just didn't quite know why.
I do love a Hitchhiker's Guide reference.
Yeah. They're poorly engineered, though, these TARDISes, aren't they? Imagine if you blew a hole in the universe the size of Belgium every time you rear-ended someone, you know. And the way it's solved is something that Moffat will, as is his wont, use again. Isn't it the way that the Day of the Doctor is solved?
Yeah, I was thinking this. I was actually listening to the Red novelization by Nick Briggs of that just the other week, and it's exactly the same trick, right? So how do we know, or how does the Doctor know that, you know, he has to press this Blitzball's lever or whatever the case is? He remembers it. It's a massive cheat, but he gets away with it, even from, like, my nerdish fan sort of perspective, because it makes sense in many ways. Like, if the Tennant Doctor doesn't remember until the Davison Doctor shows up, right? So it's not like he's, in my head anyway, like walked around with this knowledge for, you know, five regenerations or whatever it is. It's not until he appears. And the Davison Doctor doesn't remember because the moment he disappears, it sort of merges into the Tenth Doctor's timeline. So there's that sort of crap science around, you know, paradoxes and whatever else that I think the general audience can handle, but in the same way that he pulls the trick off in Day of the Doctor, he does the same thing here. And it also satisfies, you know, the hardcore nerds and their obsession with continuity. It's amazingly clever.
Yeah. I also like the way he deploys that in order to explain why Davison's sort of fatter and balder than, than he...
And then wearing Colin Baker's costume from the Twin Dilemma.
Is he really?
Yes!
From the regeneration,
With the extra material in the back.
In my head, they just don't remember because they've got... There's so much stuff happens in their life and they've got so many things to remember and neither of them knows when it's going to happen. So he's just like, eh, that'll come around. I'll remember at the time.
Yeah. Davison appearing sort of jogs his memory and stuff.
Yeah. And then, like, whether or not the science of it works, it just feels like a really nice Russell kind of just enjoy it. Don't worry about it. It's great.
I'm just going to wave my hands over here a bit.
Yeah.
Where do we think this takes place for the Fifth Doctor then?
Oh, no, he says he's traveling with Nyssa and Tegan.
Does he? He asks whether he's at. Like, the Tenant Doctor asks that.
Tenant asks him.
He doesn't answer.
Then they go straight to the Master Beard joke, which I think is possibly my favourite thing about the entire...
Doctor Whoever.
And, you know, from a straight man, that I appreciate that from Moffat. That's pretty good.
Because I remember the first time I saw it, I laughed so hard when he said, has he still got that rubbish beard? And I just thought that was so funny alone.
And then he actually makes the joke.
He says, no. And I was like, that's the end. He's like, well, I lost my mind. It's so good. And it moves on so quickly. Like, it's just a little dig. I love it.
What do we think about the music?
There's that little Davison era stab when he's figuring out what's going on. I didn't even know. I've seen it so many times, and I don't think I even noticed it until the last time. There's just like a little bit of 80s synth when he's figuring out what's happening, and it's lovely.
Oh, yes,
I think it's a direct quote from something. Like, I don't think they're doing it. I think it is a direct quote from a
it's a piece of
Davison episode.
Yeah, they've picked up the incidental music, done some filtering on it, and sort of plonked it in there.
Yeah, I should be able to recognize it. And then it goes back to Murray at the end. Obviously, they give Murray the sort of big emotional thing, but I think that may even be using music cues from Series 3. Like, I don't think they're getting Murray in to, you know, bring the BBC Orchestra in to do it.
Yeah,
do
some new stuff. Just some music from probably, I think, Last of the Time Lords.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you guys think it's just like 20 people in a room on a Sunday making it?
Oh, yeah. I think so. But, you know, they do give it more love than it needed to have. I mean, if you look at this year's Children in Need, which I just thought was beautiful, where did you guys see it?
Yeah. So this is where Jodie and who else is it?
It's Mandeep and Tosin and Jodie. And they've got a little girl on stage who's sort of talking to them on... Like, they're huge on this big screen.
In America,
They say, oh, we're in America shooting, and then the sort of screen opens, and then they come out, and the little girl goes crazy and stuff, and it's all just, like, and they only needed to do that. And there's a Matt Smith one, isn't there, where he's sort of changing clothes and you see how hairy his back is, which is sort of surprising and a bit upsetting. And like,
upsetting in what way?
Oh, I don't know.
In my pants.
But it, you know, that's all you'd need to do. And so the idea that they give it, you know, like a title and opening credits, and they put Peter Davison in the opening credits, and they make it like they sell it as a proper episode, I think. And I think that's lovely.
Yeah. I had no idea that the little girl thing was a Children in Need. That made me, like, I lost it when I watched that. It was just so adorable. You could tell how much Jodie loved it, how much she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It made you moisten up.
Oh, big time. Oh, it's just like, there was a puddle, huge puddle.
So Graham Harper's directing.
Yeah, this is Graham Harper.
Oh, okay, all right. Mm. So that's, again, you know, they're giving it more love than it really needs to have, or really, you know, absolutely needed.
It's much better than it ought to be.
Yeah. They can get away with something a lot less elaborate and a lot less kind of pseudo-canonical. I also like, too, that they do try and make it a proper episode. Like, it ends with the, you know, the end of Last of the Time Lords. Or, you know, it clearly takes place in between sort of
heartbeats.
Yeah. Something weird happens.
Such a beautiful little cheat, isn't it? So, like, you go from the end of Last of the Time Lords where you see the Titanic crashing through, and you're expecting, obviously, you know, to go into Voyage of the Damned. But obviously this is sort of like a sneaky little cutaway. But it also harkens back to the beginning of Series 3, doesn't it, with the Runaway Bride. And it's just like a lovely, Moffat obviously sort of playing with the narrative sort of structures of Doctor Who and harkening back to previously in Series 3. Just on the use of the director, it's really lovely to have, you know, maybe the most famous director from Davison's, maybe his best story back as well. I think that's a nice little nod back to 1983.
Yeah, isn't it? I hadn't really thought of that. But, of course, Graham Harper had directed stories for both of them.
Mm. Mm, yeah.
How do we think Pete comes across?
He does two things which I really love and endear him to me massively in this story. At first, he reacts to David Tennant like kind of like I do and like that we all do. Is there something wrong with you?
Probably the way he does now that he's his father-in-law as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's try not to think too much about that.
And that he sort of chastises him for just babbling on about everything that happens to be in front of him. And he gets so... He's almost like a grumpy dad. Like, I remember when my dad got really mad when I changed anything about our computer, like the desktop or whatever. And he gets mad at Tennant for
like
changing
it's a
the desktop
thing. Saying you've fiddled with the things.
You've changed it. Well, I don't understand it anymore.
Do you know what I think is really lovely is that we always remember Davison as the kind doctor, but and I think Nathan, you've said this many times in the past as well. He's actually not. And when he's compared against Tennant, who's, you know, perhaps, you know, to the public at least, the most lovable doctor, I think he's closer to Hartnell than he is to Tennant. And there's that, you know, almost like, oh, actually, yeah, that's right. Peter Davison's doctor was, you know, sometimes astringent and acerbic and a bit of a smart aleck. And it sort of reminded me of something that maybe isn't so pronounced or well remembered about the Fifth Doctor.
Mm. It's he's impatient, I think.
Exasperated.
Yeah. I love it. It's my favourite thing about him. And he's playing it on a different level here. You know, he's playing it as a sketch. He has to play the guy who doesn't know what's going on, which is a sort of very different kind of role from what he had as the Doctor. He's not quite like the way he played it originally. But I just think, you know, he's so spectacular and we were so lucky to have him as the Doctor for those few years.
I just love that Tennant starts immediately doing his Tennant thing and sort of babbling and going really fast and being quite funny and charismatic. And Davison just finds it super annoying, about as annoying as I do sometimes. I just love that he reacts that way.
Again, it's what the War Doctor does. Like, Moffat will use this again. And it's the War Doctor who is clearly standing in for the posh classic series doctors, going, you know, who are you babbling children waving your enormous sonic screwdrivers around and saying timey-wimey, you know? And so... Yeah. Here I was actually on rewatch just a little bit surprised to see Peter Davison agree to join in with the timey-wimey, but you know, nevertheless. And then there's how it ends, and I'm going to quote L. Sander for now, James.
Take a drink, dear listener.
there's no way that that speech makes any sense within the sort of narrative or within the way that living as the Doctor would work. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, there's a little bit, I loved being you or whatever, I got these things off you, but that kind of doesn't really make any sense. And the only way it really does make sense is as David Tennant and Stephen Moffat saying to Peter Davison how much they loved him as the Doctor and how much sort of future sort of versions of the Doctor, you know, depend on him. You know, we always say Troughton is the Doctor who created the role, but the first word the Doctor says in the new series is run, and the only Doctor who's really ever run has been Peter Davison. You know, he runs, he has the sneakers, you know, that idea that he's a youngish hero, very, very bright, but still really young and lively, that's Davison.
Even to the point where they like straight up just point out the influences, those like the squeaky voice, the the trainers and the being young and the brain specs, which is just so sweet. The way he says those lines is just beautifully directed and perfectly timed, and it's just really lovely.
I love the brainy specs line because it just reminds me of how much Janet Fielding used to mock Peter Davison for wearing them.
I think I read somewhere, possibly
El Sandifer.
El Sandifer. Peter Davison is the first modern Doctor, really. He's the first Doctor as young man.
Yeah,
he really is the template for most of the new series.
Yeah,
in the Doctor is sort of action hero running around hectically trying to save the world. He's much more in the mold of David Tennant and Matt Smith than any other Doctor is.
Well, if you think about Lazarus Experiment this year, and you've got, you know, the Doctor leaping over consoles and all of that kind of thing, like there's not a single other Doctor that you can imagine doing anything like that in the classic series apart from Pete.
No, absolutely not. And to the point where I sometimes think, do we have Tennant in the tuxedo and you know, subsequent Doctors in the tuxedo, because there's that promo shot of Peter Davison addressed as Bond on the shoot for Planet of Fire. Like he casts quite a long shadow into New Who, I think, Davison, and I think it's right that you know he's celebrated and remembered in that way. I think another thing that's like really touching around this, and this is could never have been intended at the time, but it's like what I guess the Tennant legacy is as well. Like obviously, it's what 10 years or so since Tennant left the role, but it's almost as though you know people will be looking back on the Tennant era in the same way that, you know, when we were in the midst of the Tennant era, we looked back at the Davison era through this, and there's something quite lovely about that. The passing of time is sort of captured in that moment, but also, yeah, it's also something that, you know, continues and is still relevant. I still look at that, and I, you know, also watched it the other day, and the most heartbreaking thing was the realization that, oh my God, this is 12 years ago. You know, my life has changed irrevocably. And the young, the old Doctor and the young Doctor, it's almost as though, like, you know, I'm looking back to when I was, you know, 20-something and a skinny young idiot. And, you know, there's something really touching about that portrayal between the two of them. And, you know, it is definitely, you know, as we say, Moffat and Tennant talking to Davison as their favourite Doctor, but I think it does also speak to the way that we all change. And what's that line from, you know, the last episode of Matt Smith, we're all different people in the end, just as long as we remember who we were. That sort of came to mind when I was watching this again.
In fact, you're even 12 years later, Steve, you're still more beautiful than David Tennant.
Oh, damn.
Betty, you've still got better hair.
At least some of us do.
I was going to say, in fact, that it's really Moffat's first go at characterizing the different regenerations of the Doctor as different stages of development, and where he does that thing about how you try and be all old and important, which is what you do when you're young. You know, the reason that Hartnell is sort of crotchety and sort of pompous and stuff, which of course he isn't, is because he's young, you know, and he's trying to seem grown up. And I think that's gorgeous. I think that's absolutely superb.
That's also that strange reflective thing where he talks about being young and getting old, when in fact, almost, you know, in my mind, the Doctors kind of get progressively younger. I know it's not like exact, but they just seem to get progressively younger up until Tennant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for a very brief moment, this story was the highest rated episode of the new series.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it because people are tuning in to Children in Need anyway.
But Children in Need... Children in Need only averaged 9.6 million viewers. So this gained another 1.5 million viewers.
And then it'll be knocked off by Kylie. Yeah.
But it rated 11 million.
Of course.
Yeah. So for, you know, 29 days or something, it was the highest rated Doctor Who story of the 21st century.
I just think it's like a really fun little adventure, a nice little nod to Davison, and it would have all been fine without that bit at the end where they get all lovey-dovey about you and my doctor and Snap and all that. It would have been great without it, but when they put it in, it just elevates the thing and makes it wonderful to me.
Dear listener, it looks like we've got a fairly extensive cleanup job ahead of us, so we'll be off and we'll see you again at Christmas for Voyage of the Damned. In the meantime, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and you can keep up with us at Flight Through Entirety on Facebook, at FTE Podcast on Twitter, and on our website, flightthroughentirety.com, where you'll find links to our other podcasts, Bondfinger and Jodie into Terror. And Stephen and Dan, where can people find you?
Well, you can find us at Twitter at New to Who Podcast.
You can find pretty much all of our podcast episodes at newtowho.com or like whatever podcast app you use.
Until next time, may you keep zooming around space and time, saving planets, fighting monsters, and being, well, let's be honest, pretty sort of marvellous. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good seeing you.
What?
That was Flight Through Entirety, starring Nathan Bottomley, James Selwood and Stephen and Dan from New to Who. Theme arrangement by Cameron Lamb, strings performance by Jane Orberg. This episode, Remember Who We Were, was recorded on the 10th of December 2019 and released on the 22nd of December. This episode is three times as long as the story it describes, which makes me think that we've undersold some important stories in the past. So look forward in the new year to a re-release of our Daleks Master Plan episode, which will clock in at 5 hours. And sometimes there are bits where we're talking about the episode, but we're kind of flagging a bit or whatever, and I just sort of think, okay, the energy's not right for the main show. I'm going to put it at the end. So
much like most of the things that James says on this podcast.
Please feel free to take out my wank about the Baker-Davison ratings. I always get that wrong.
Oh, no, I'll just sort of cut it so that we all look as smart as possible.
Yes, that's what... thank you.
But no one quite as smart as Nathan.
Well, no, that's true. That's I'll come back in and record, re-record my bit so that I sound even smarter.
And you can just cut,
James
like,
didn't know I did that.
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
You can just told me. Insert some witty jokes and like cut in laughter from somewhere else.
Edit out laughing. James here.
All right, here goes. Well, dear listener, it looks like we've got a fairly extensive...